KFSR presents First Ladies Focus, the personal stories behind people who love Fresno State. Featuring Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro, and KFSR Program Director, Julie Logan, 90.7 KFSR.
Good morning and welcome. I'm Julie Logan, along with my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Julie.
We're excited to have another very special guest with us today, and as always, I'll let you make the introductions.
Well, this has been a great start to our year, and one of the reasons we were having such a fantastic 2015 is because we have Jim Bartko, who is our new athletic director, joining us this morning. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
So nice to meet you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Julie.
Now, Jim has been running nonstop since he arrived in Fresno, and a big part of that is because you are such an outgoing person. I love after your appointment was announced back at the end of last year, you attended some of the football games, and as Joe and I were going around the tailgates, we kept running into you.
Yeah.
And I like how, you know, you just, I call it throwing yourselves to the lions. Yeah. You threw yourselves into the lions because you just wanted to meet everybody. And you know it's impossible to remember everybody's name, but it's so important to make that effort.
Well, the people here are what makes it. And, you know, my first idea is to get out and meet everybody that's so special, this university. And my job is not to sit in the office. It's to thank the people that have made this place unique and special. So the first few months, I just want to get out and meet everybody, hear the stories, hear their passion, hear their families, their history. And I've loved it. The people have been great to me. And I can't wait till my family gets here and has a chance to dive into the community also.
Yes. And everybody is excited to meet your family and to hear about you and to get to know you on a personal level. Now, I know it's been difficult because you're separated from your core team, which is Eileen, your wife, and then you have a son, AJ, who's 17, and your daughter, Daniela, who's 12.
Yeah.
And that's because AJ's in his senior year, right?
Senior in high school, very active in sports, great student. You know, I didn't want to move the family, you know, in January of his senior year, and he's right in the middle of basketball season and kind of wrapping that up, which is a little bittersweet not being able to see him play his last few games. And I'm going back a little bit just to see his senior year. My wife's staying back. Daughter's my little pistol. She's going to be, she'll take Fresno by storm. She's 12 going on 22, and she's one of my great ambassadors. Loves sports, loves hanging out with dad at the office, and helps me with tailgating. And Eileen's been the rock. She was very successful in business, and once we got married and had kids, she kind of put that aside. So they're excited to come. It's a perfect time. My son will be going to college, and then they'll be coming down starting seventh grade for my daughter and looking for houses. And
great.
So it's been fun.
Well, I had the opportunity to meet your wife and your daughter when you came for the press conference. And your daughter is just so sweet.
Yeah.
Just, you know, just a sweet young lady. And I love the story that you told about how she encouraged you to go for the job.
Yeah.
And that's why I say your core team,
because,
you know, when you go home at night after you've been doing everything else, the people that love you and support you and who are willing to make the sacrifices for you.
Yeah.
In our family, we've moved. This is our 15th move.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, whenever an opportunity presented itself, we would weigh it out and we actually would draw on a paper pros and cons.
Yeah.
And everybody in the family was able to put a pro or a con. And then we'd say, go for it, you know, but you have to have everybody on board to be able to do that. And the fact that, you know, you and your wife are being so sensitive to your son and his need to finish out his senior year, and that your daughter, I mean, because she could be ornery at 12 and say, but that everybody is supporting each other. I love that about your family. And I'm really excited to get to know your wife more.
Yeah.
And I'm happy for you that they're going to be coming here.
It's kind of, you know, obviously that text when I dropped my daughter off at school the day I was flying out here, and I was always, she said, Daddy, are you going to get the job? I'm like, well, I don't know. I have one more. And then she sent me a text that night and just said, I'll bet you rocked the interview. Let's do this together.
Oh.
And so it's kind of like you get my tears in my eyes.
Oh my
and I'm like,
gosh.
Well, then I didn't know if I got it or not. And then once I got it, she was all excited. And she's excited to come down. She wants to help decorate my office. And
I love that.
At Oregon, she was kind of like, she'd come by and have a little, she had her own outbox. The coaches would come by and give her, you know, hi, Danielle. Good to see you. And she has her own little mailbox. But she's excited. And it's probably bittersweet. It's probably better that they're home this first 6 months. Because, you know, for me right now, it's every night and every day doing something. And if they were here, I'd probably be worried that I'm not home enough. And they can finish out, get the house sold, finish out their senior year. She's in the Peter Pan play, and she's doing volleyball and basketball. And my son's got basketball and tennis. And they got a full schedule.
It sounds like it.
So it's like for the next 5 months, we can battle with, you know, being away. And I'm trying to get back a little bit. And they'll come down a little bit. But they're special, and it is family, because, you know, work is very important. Your job is very important. But when it comes down to it, it's your family.
That's it. Why do you do it?
Yeah. So.
Well, we'll go back to your Valley roots here. So you were born in Stockton, and then you attended schools in Pinole and eventually graduated from Central Catholic High School in Modesto.
Yeah.
Your parents are James, which you say is Jim, and Mary Jane. And you have one sister who's older than you.
Yeah.
Her name is Kim. We won't say how much older, because then you're going to get, you know, your sister's going to take it out on you next time you see her. But she is actually a Fresno State alumna.
Yep, she is.
So you have a direct tie to our campus before you got here. What was it like for you growing up in the Valley? Were you active in a lot of things like your children are?
Yeah. So I was, you know, obviously my parents met in Manteca and were married. Then they moved to Stockton where I was born, and we lived there through third grade, moved to Pinole for a few years. Then I spent 6th through 12th grade in Modesto, and always very active in whether it's the church, but also I played sports all through, you know, back then you could play football, basketball, baseball, and you're allowed to do that nowadays. Uh-huh. They make you do one or two, but we were very active. My dad was my coach. My mom was like the school volunteer.
And,
sister was to dance and cheer. Wasn't as much of the athlete sport wise, but she was always a special ed. Wanted to be a teacher. Her 5th grade teacher was her role model.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And so they still talk. And so she's up in Portland teaching, and now in her 30th year of teaching, whatever it is, and loves it. And my daughter kind of wants to follow those footsteps. But we had a great family and great activities. And my grandparents are in Manteca, and aunts and uncles are still in Manteca and ripping. And so I still see them, but my immediate family's back in Portland, retired. But the Valley is where I grew up, and I don't know any. It's been 30 years, I guess. I left in 83, I guess. So it's I would come down quite a bit for family stuff, but it was special. I know the people, and I know the community is not just Fresno; it's the Valley, and it's they have very strong passion ties. And I think if we can just reach out and make sure they know that everyone's important in this whole community, that's my job, is to help bring them back and help the whole university.
So in Manteca, did you have a lot of cousins that lived around you?
Yep,
get together for family events?
It was always at my grandparents' house. And we'd have, it'd be a zoo on Christmas morning, you know, with everything.
Yes.
So, but it was great. We do some of our family stuff. And my dad's mom was in Ripon, so we'd do dinner there and Christmas Eve dinner at my other grandma's and play pinochle. I love cars. I love pinochle.
Oh,
and
good.
Love pinochle, and my wife hates them, but but I'm a pinochle, cribbage, dominoes. I love that stuff. So
we did a lot of board games all the time when I was growing up, or a large portion of my childhood. We didn't have a television.
Yeah.
And it was by choice on my parents' part. And, you know, so then we did a lot of Monopoly. It was all kinds of board games, puzzles, things like that. And, you know, it's so much more interactive.
Yeah.
And you really get to hear the stories about your family growing up. That's where I would hear my grandparents tell a lot of things.
Yeah.
Stories about where they came from and trouble that my uncles got into and things to avoid, you know.
And you just never talk politics. I learned at a young age.
Oh, no.
You know, you get on Thanksgiving dinner and you'd have all the spectrums. It was like the minute it would come up, my grandma would say, no. My grandpa would be this, my uncle would be that, and be like, oh, here we go.
Just bring out the cards and play pinochle.
Just bring out the cards and play pinochle. Don't bring up the politics, because you can never win on that one.
So what field did your father work in?
Title insurance. So he started out at Tycor Title and moved his way up and spent 30-some years between Stockton, Modesto, Pinole. Then he ran the state of Washington for Tycor Title and retired 8-10 years ago. And my mom never worked. But then once they got up to Portland, she became banking and loved it. And she's more like me. She loves to be out in people. She loves to, she goes. My dad's more like my wife, which likes to, you know, take a rest time and read and run. Mm-hmm. And I can never sleep. I prefer to go 100 miles an hour, and which kind of crash and burn sometimes. But it's like, I'm more happy taking care of, make sure everybody's taken care of and have fun and enjoy what we're doing.
What was the attitude towards higher education when you were growing up?
It's a great story. My sister, my mom and dad did not go to college. My aunt, my mom's sister is a nurse, and she still works at General's Hospital in Modesto. But myself and my sister were our first two in the grandkids that went to college. And my sister was the first. But they always knew it was important, but it was just a matter of my other cousins didn't. And but my sister kind of led the way. And it was always, high school is not the end. You better think, you know, through college. It was always, you know, don't assume you have 1 year left and you're on your own. You're going to, you're going to go to college.
Have a plan.
You have a plan. And we had some opportunities, and it came down for me to go to either St. Mary's in Moraga or Washington State, where my parents moved to. And I went to Washington State and started volunteering with their football staff right away to learn. I knew I wanted to be an athletic director from when I was a kid. I wanted to either be a pro baseball player or, you know, you got to a point where you know you couldn't do that. And but then I knew I wanted to be an athletic, so I just worked my tail off through college. And every day I'd probably spend more hours working and just kind of being grunt labor and whatever they needed me to do, and stuff envelopes and set up equipment and do travel and drive the truck around. And that kind of set the tone for just working and getting to know people and relating with coaches.
Right.
And then once I got through college, they offered me a position at Washington State, and I spent 2 years there, then got hired at Oregon in 88.
So you obviously have the strong work ethic to do whatever it took to reach your goal.
Yeah.
But what is it about sports and about working in sports that you said you knew you wanted to do it? But what is the thrill that you get? Tell us about that feeling, where your passion is rooted.
Well, ever since, there's pictures when no videos or YouTube or Facebook back in the early 70s. But, you know, my mom said she always knew I was going to be in sports somehow because I'd be in the backyard making up games myself. And I was a whole baseball team, the LA Dodgers. I was, you know, I just knew I was, you know, imagining what I was doing. So I always knew I wanted to do it. And I could never see myself doing anything other than being in sports in some capacity. It was my passion.
That's
what I loved. It's what made me happy and what I knew. And athletic administration is kind of the best of both worlds. You can deal with student athletes, hopefully make them better and give them, because very few go pro. But if you can be a good role model, get them through college, get them a degree. Also the fans and the alumni, you're interacting with them. And the coaches have been great. It's the best of both worlds for me. It's a business where you have to have a plan in place to grow because it's, I've used this, I think, at the press conference, but athletics is by far and away not the most important part of the university, by far and away. But it's a great window for the whole campus. And I love the collaboration between units and how athletics can help different schools and we can work together. And if you kind of get on a silo where you're kind of by yourself thinking you're the most important, nobody succeeds.
It's not going to work, right?
So it's much, much more fun to work together. And
so much stronger.
You'll have your different opinions and how you do it. But I think if you're up front and people know you care, then I think you can make a big difference. And at Oregon, we were fortunate. We kind of worked together, and those 25 years at Oregon, we were able to kind of build a brand, and it elevated the whole university enrollment and admissions and annual fund for every school and building. So it's, I think the opportunities here are endless for the whole campus.
Well, you've spoken in other interviews about the importance of fundraising, and that is an area where you've been very successful, where you raised over $375 million for capital improvements and facility enhancements at University of Oregon. And you worked on several large projects there. How important is your role specifically in fundraising? Are you a person who feels like you need to delegate, or you take it on yourself? You hold yourself responsible? I mean, as the athletic director, now the buck stops with you, right?
Great question. I think each AD is different. Some people are more internal accounting side, and then you have somebody else next to you doing the external. I think it's going to be my job to put together a plan in place that people of all levels, and I mean, I think fundraising is strictly people's skills. I mean, I think it's just a lot of those gifts that we brought in Oregon, I didn't ask for a penny from them, but I built a friendship and a trust, laid out kind of what our vision is, and they said, okay, I want to help. What can I do? And I think that's better than just me sitting down every day saying, you know, give money. And they need to know what you're giving for, knowing what if it's going to be used well. And if they trust you and trust the vision that the president has and we have and it's all together, fundraising is very simple if it's a people and they feel important. And I think it's a key, too, is it's not just $1 million donor or the $10,000. You've got to start out with the young alums and a $100 donor to a $5,000 donor.
Everybody can play a role in it.
Then eventually they move up the ladder, but you need both. And I think that's where our staff's got to get out and see people and work with campus fundraisers and make sure the community feels that they're engaged and feel a part of it.
Right.
And that's the fun part because I think they're out there. What I've heard, they're out there, and they just want to be known that we care.
Well, I think that a big part of it is in line with what you're saying, is that it's our job to inspire people to want to be connected.
Yeah.
Once we tell them about the potential of all of the great programs and our students' talent and where the vision is, they want to be engaged. They just want to know how.
Right.
And also, you know, how valuable it is, like you said, any kind of level and all the different ways that you can be a part of supporting the campus and helping it to move up together. When you let people know that they are the reason that it's going to be successful and they are inspired by it, that is when they're motivated to give. You don't have to, you know, like be beating the drum all the time about it, because they want to see great things happen. This is our campus. Yeah. This is the campus of the Valley, and they want it to be successful. They just want to know how we're going to get there.
And I've had the best time so far when I go to the games, and I don't get a chance to watch all the games because I make a point of it just to walk them down the stands and, and just shake hands and say hi to somebody. And they're kind of going, what are you, you know, and I just think I need to get all of our staff doing that. And our coaches and our student athletes are the best ambassadors for our program. And if we can get them engaged and our donors know who they're supporting, and NCAA's changed a lot. The costs are going up. There's new regulations. We've got to stay ahead of the curve, which means we need to get everybody involved. And it's a big time in college athletics and all universities to see where it's going to go in the next 5 to 10 years. And we need to be a little out in front and look at that.
Well, you had been at Oregon for almost 26 years, mm-hmm. and you had a good situation. You've said that in your other press conference, that you didn't feel like you needed to leave.
Yeah.
What was it about Fresno State that made you want to apply?
It's a great question. I've had chances over the years. You got a lot of, you know, the headhunters, and they call mm-hmm. you. And I always told my son I wasn't going to leave him in high school. Uh-huh. I felt it was important that once he started, you know, I had two jobs that were offered during his high school that would have moved him. But I just felt, you know, it's for me to get a title and a little bit more money, it's not worth uprooting somebody like him that's mm-hmm. and he's doing so good in school and he's well-rounded. But when this job opened, I got a call. It was, I'd like the opportunity. I love college towns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go to some places, you know, I was at Cal. I love Cal. But you get kind of lost in the shuffle of all the pro teams and all the colleges. Here, you know, you're kind of it. You have a paper and you have news stations and they're all kind of wrapped. For the good or bad. I mean, mm-hmm. you get a lot of positive and negative publicity in the papers and the news, but I knew the people here are Fresno State fans, and mm-hmm. if we can just get them engaged, and it's a college atmosphere, it's kind of coming home. And yes. It was the right timing for me. I'm not somebody that's going to take a job and 2 years later take another job, and kind of my ego is not enough that I have to, you know, I just love what I do, and it's also yes. having a good time, and the family's supportive, and I can see where there's a vision, and obviously the president and his time I spent with him makes it, because ultimately it comes from the top, and mm-hmm. you need to enjoy, and the cabinet meetings have had more fun just getting great. To know all that people, because they all want the same thing.
Yes.
And we just have to make it, you know, one thing I, you know, it's probably a good and bad thing, but my first staff meeting, I'm not a suit and tie everyday person, especially in athletics when you're out wandering, you're out of uh-huh. practice. I just said, everybody, I want two things. I want you to come to work, dress appropriately, but you don't need to be on football game days wearing a suit and tie at 110 uh-huh. degree weather when you're tailgating. And two, I want you to have fun every day coming to work.
Uh-huh.
And three, don't forget your family.
That's great.
Because if your son has a 4:30 basketball game, you're putting in 60, 70 hour weeks, mm-hmm. go home and watch your son play.
Right.
And because it's, you know, we can figure out that half hour or evening, but it goes too fast, as we all know. You know, I look at my son now, who's, you know, kind of the most bittersweet thing I've had so far is when I left, I finally drove down on the 4th of January, where that Monday was, down here, and I left the house, and I was all excited. I got in the car, started driving. I hit about Ashland, realizing that I'll never live with my son again.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, it was, you know, because usually you always kind of worry about, he goes to college, and you go to his bedroom in the back corner, and...
Yes.
But now it's like, I'm 6 months early, and, you know, he'll still come visit, and, you know, uh-huh. I'll see him on weekends or summers, but... I'll never have that every night,
everything.
Tucking them in bed. And so that was kind of the only part when I kind of went, I didn't get a plastic bag and do the deep breathing, but I was kind of like, oh, it's just.
But they catch you off guard, those moments.
It sunk in, like, I'm not going to ever have that, you know, every yes. night watching football together. The, you know, we used to always watch the Super Bowl together, and uh-huh. so it's gone. So, but he's a great kid, and he'll do great in college, and well, I still talk to him every day and text him every day. So.
I had a moment like that when we took our oldest son, Isaac, to Cal. And we had went and unloaded all of his stuff into the dorm. And then we were running around to the stores buying stuff for him. And then it was time for us to go. And we're on Telegraph Avenue there in Berkeley. And he goes, okay, Mom, Dad, I'm just going to go from here, kind of type of thing. And he had, because we had bought him some books that he needed. And he took off walking down the sidewalk.
Oh,
I looked at him, and it just hit me. I said, that's what he's going to look like when we're not here. You know, I was like, he's going to be a man walking alone.
Amongst 45,000 students. Yeah.
You know, but it catches you at weird times, and you realize. And then we had a picture of him giving a presentation in his job. And I said, look, Joe, we grew a man. You know, it's like you always think of them as your little kids. And then all of a sudden you look at them and they're adults.
Yeah.
And it just affects you in a different way.
If you raise them the right way, you'll never stop worrying about them.
Oh, that's
but hopefully
for sure.
If you raise them with the right values, and they'll be great leaders, our future leaders. And that's kind of what I look at our student athletes and students is got to do the best we can. You're always going to have a few athletes that kind of go on the wrong end, or students that go on the wrong end. It's not just athletes anymore; it's in mm-hmm. society. But you just have to do the best you can and lead and by example and.
Well, that's really remarkable that you made the choice in your own life to put your son's high school experience in welfare ahead of some professional opportunities.
Yeah,
those are some tough choices to make. And yet in the long run, those sacrifices pay off and set a great example of priorities and values. Your son will always remember that you were there for him.
Well, I love coaching. I coached him, you know, in every sport up through eighth grade, and I volunteered and just going to see him play games. And I don't want to make the mistake of moving across country in the middle of high school and having him go downhill.
Right.
And then I look back and go, gosh, he was such a good kid. And then I moved him in the middle. He probably could have been fine anywhere he went.
Uh-huh.
But it was worth sacrificing a little bit to pick the right opportunity. And be still selective. And you're right, I had a great job at Oregon. I didn't need to, I could have been there and retired there, but the opportunity here at Fresno, with my background here and the opportunity I think the school has, was what leaned me to go take the opportunity. And then I got fortunate enough. Either four people said no and I got selected.
Or, you know, that's not true.
Well, you've been gone a long time. Welcome home.
Well, thank you. That's it. I keep getting abused from my aunts and uncles going, or, you know, they invited me down. So I haven't had time to come down to.
That's it. You're right here now.
Come down. So I'm like, I stopped on the way through and had dinner at Manteca on the way here. And,
good.
So I saw my aunt and some of the cousins and, but I'll get down there more often once everything gets settled. So
how important is the relationship between the university president and the athletic director in making sure that the sports programs are successful?
It's the most important, because I think the president, not just athletics, but he sets the tone for entire campus. And we all of us were in that cabin need to work together. And I think if we're on the same page, what the vision is and his vision has been great. And I'm just a small part of that overall vision. But you need to be collaborative and you need to work together. And I really want to look long term, because I don't think we in athletics so far have had a 5-year plan, a 3-year plan, and kind of how we're going to lay things out financially and fundraising and staffing. And I think it's been very critical that we aren't always a drain on the university. We've got to raise more money and be self-sufficient, and hope that'll help the entire university. So the generosity that the university has given to athletics and the collaboration has been great. Now it's our turn to be good team partners and follow his vision. So
what were the first three things that you felt were absolutely necessary for you to do when you arrived here at Fresno State?
The first 2 weeks, boy, it's been a whirlwind. I felt it was mandatory that I meet every head coach. Mm-hmm. And I spent an hour with every single person. I've now met with most of the cabinet for an hour just to go through their vision. I've tried to get some of the top 10 to 15 donors, met with all of our units, whether it's compliance and business and all those areas, just so they know who I am and what I'm about. And that's been, I've really been going, if I look at it, 2.5 to 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. I think people get to know me and what I'm doing. I don't want to make too much hasty decisions right away. I mean, I think people can come in and kind of go, I'm changing this right now. I don't think it does any good, because you don't know. I can see the little things that I'd like to tweak here and there. But the foundation is pretty much in place. I just always tell our staff, take 70% of what you're doing right now. That's right. Mm-hmm. Then be prepared to change the other 30. Because you always have
good.
To change.
Because that's not too intimidating. No, changing 30% is not intimidating.
Just when we go in a room, I'm going to look at some things. Tell me if I'm wrong. What I don't like hearing is, oh, we did that 10 years ago. It doesn't work. Let's just be open-minded and look at our donors. I sent an email out day 2 to all of our donors and ticket holders. And I'm going to start doing that once a month, just saying, here's an update of what we're doing. Because what I've found is they haven't had a whole lot of communication from athletics. Mm-hmm. Here's what do you think? And I asked for restaurant tips and where to get, and I had four or 500 people reply, just thank you so much, and here's the list. And
wonderful.
I replied each one individually, and it was just fun to just say thank you and get a lot of input. A lot of people have opinions, and we always know we can't solve every problem or do every opinion they have, but if they know you've listened,
yes,
and they know you care. You can tell them no, and you can say it just doesn't work, as long as they have a...
You at least considered their view of it.
Looked at it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we're running out of time, and there are so many more questions that I'd love to ask you, but the most important one is, how did you and Eileen meet and fall in love?
Great. Good question. She went to Washington State also, same major, business, sports administration. We had classes together, knew each other, but not closely. She then got hired at Oregon as an intern.
Oh.
In marketing department. Then got elevated to the associate AD for marketing and media relations. So when I got hired, we worked together for 2 or 3 years and then started dating and got married in 94. So that was, we both were there at 89. So she had a big time job much before I did. And then once we got married, she left athletics. And she'll be a big help to me as a volunteer to come in, and she's got the experience in athletics and she can help our staff a little bit on ideas and put some time in the games and just be a good resource to use, because she ran that entire side of it for many, many years during Oregon's growth. So
wonderful.
We got married in 95 and she continued to work through about 2000, 2002. And then she hasn't worked since, but I think she's actually getting ready to just do some volunteering. She does a lot of board work and foundation work and school charity work and helps out a lot of different areas. So
how did you get up the nerve to ask for the first date?
She actually invited me, small
she
world, to
you.
A Whitney Houston concert in Portland. Unfortunately, a lot of tragedy in that whole family right now, but it was kind of a non-date. She had tickets and we went, and then we just slowly thereafter. So had our first son, and first son was born in 96 on Christmas morning.
Oh, wow.
He was a Christmas baby. and now just turned 18 a few weeks ago, and then my daughter was born 4 years later.
So, oh my goodness. So what's something that you have on your bucket list that does not involve work?
Yeah.
It's just for you.
Yeah, you always look for chips. I always wanted to go on a safari.
Oh.
I just despise flying that much. So, I wish you could just get there like a car drive, but down the road someday I'd like to do that. But it's right now I want to find a house. I want to get my daughter into school. I want to get the family here. And
those are necessities.
Just have some sanity. Uh-huh. Come summer, have a little sanity where I can know we put everything's in place and the structure's in place and we're moving forward. So
that's great. Well, thank you so much, Jim, for agreeing to be here.
Anytime. Glad to
be
here.
And I, along with the rest of the community, really look forward to getting to know your family more and welcoming you to Fresno State.
Thank you. Means a lot. I appreciate
it. So nice to meet you. Thank you. Thank you so much for being with us this morning.
You bet. Thank you.
Well, thanks again to our very special guest, Fresno State Athletic Director Jim Bartko, and of course, my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Thanks for joining us this morning, and please join us again next Sunday morning at 10 for another First Ladies Focus on KFSR. We're on the air at 90.7 FM and streaming worldwide at www.kfsr.org.
KFSR presents First Ladies Focus. Every Sunday morning at 10. For a complete program schedule, visit kfsr.org.